As a graduate student, Bob, I'm glad that my major professor didn't have me analyze the records of all those cattle and do everything with them. I really appreciate that. We're going to talk a little bit about strategies to improve production and the southern efficiency in cattle in the Southern Plains. And I guess the first thing I had to do when Bob called me, I had to figure out exactly what he meant by the Southern Plains. Because I figured that because he knew who I was and kind of my temperament, I don't know what my cortisol level is, but I thought he might mean like the South. So I started Googling it, and all these states started popping up, and particularly down in northern Mexico. But I did kind of draw my line, Bob, at the Rio Grande. So the Southern Plains, as we're going to find it here, is southern Kansas, parts of New Mexico, Colorado, Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, maybe a little bit of Louisiana. I want to let you know that we do have extremes and environmental conditions, just like y'all do. Now, this was Christmas 2005. We had 12 inches of snow. Now, to let you know where I'm at, I'm 100 miles north of the Mexican border, just 100 miles north of Brownsville. Now, that's a twice-in-a-lifetime event. The other time that happened was about 1968. So it does get a little chilly down there once in a while. I looked up the word strategies, and the best I can tell is not having a plan. It's kind of having a plan, but as soon as you start working towards it and things change, then you change. And obviously that's different than a goal. And then I looked up a little bit about production efficiency. There's a lot of different ways of calculating production efficiency. If you've been coming here, if you've been in animal science or come into BIF, you know, we've changed the way we've calculated it. In fact, we've even changed some of the terms. But, you know, basically, we're trying to use some of the technology that fits for us. And I think that's what our speakers talked about this morning. You know, I came here expecting to see a really good dog fight. I really did this morning. You know, but to be quite honest with you, you know, the advocates of crossbreeding held their ground, and the guys that were advocating mostly straight breeding, they kind of came closer to the center. But basically it comes to what's your plan, and then what kind of tools get used. Not everybody's going to be able to use every tool that's out there for us to be able that's available. Not just because of cost, but just because of applicability. And then I kind of looked up calf value. You know, we go to the coffee shop and somebody says, you know, I got $1.50 for my calves. And somebody else comes and says, well, I got $2 for mine. And immediately you think they're better calves. Well, one guy sold 5-weight calves and the other guy sold 3-weight calves. Okay, and so it's not only just what you get for that calf, but it's a sum of all your genetic and management expertise that you put into that. And really that calf value begins when you make that first mating. It has nothing to do with that calf when you sell them. It's too late to make much change. And so there's a whole bunch of management decisions. I'm not going to go through all these. I'm a livestock specialist, and I'm sure that most of y'all have a state extension specialist in your state. And so if you're interested in any of those others that are below the genetic side, okay, go ask your livestock beef cattle specialist. We've got a good one sitting right here from Kansas. And they'll tell you some of those. I want to focus more on the genetic side in terms of management decisions, because that really kind of fits into what we're talking about in terms of beef improvement from the genetic side. I've stole some information from a good friend and colleague of mine, Dr. Steve Hammond. He put together a series of bulletins. I guess there's about 12 of them. Some are co-authored, but essentially they're called the Texas Adaptive Genetic Strategies. And really, we probably should have called them the Southern Plains Adaptive Genetic Strategies, but that would be kind of like a SPAGS, right, in terms of an acronym. But the TAGS, this happens to be number one, an overview in which what's the term is strategies in there. If you're interested in looking at some of these, you can go up there and go. Just remember this really simple website, beef.tamu.edu. Okay? And look under tags, look under publications, and there's all the publications there. And if you look at that cow, I kind of thought that was a Simmental Charolais cross. How many of y'all would think that that's a Simmental Charlotte cross? What do you think it is? Would you believe it's a Beefmaster? No. It's from the old Carol Beefmaster operation. And of course, we're trying to make this calf acceptable to the market, and so he's what? Got a little black hide on. Probably enough to pass the 51%. But this was back in the late 1960s, early 1970s. Pretty big calf. And so this actually, I think, Steve told me to make sure that I credited Dr. Cundiff with it, with the initiation of this chart. And we use this a lot when we talk to producers about, you know, they want to know, well, what kind of cattle do I need to restock with? Or what kind of cattle do I need to select for it? And so across the top, you can see that there's six traits that are up there: belting ability, mature size, ability to store energy, stress tolerance, calving ease, and lean to fat ratio. And over here on your left-hand side, you've got two columns. One is forage availability, and then environmental stress. I'm just going to cover this top of the chart, but for most of our folks in South Texas, maybe in the Southern Plains, okay, we never have the opportunity to get into that high forage availability. And most of the time, we're sort of in this low forage availability and occasionally in high. And almost always, we're in an environmental stress. Okay? It's kind of like that dry cow. We figure, you know, that dry pregnant cow. We figure that, you know, 9 months of the year, she's a dry pregnant cow. She's not. Most of the time, we're in some sort of pretty high environmental stress. And so, as we read across this chart, you can see that you don't want to find the heaviest milking cow to be in your commercial operation. Or you don't want to have the biggest cow out there. A 1,600-pound cow may not be the kind of cow that you need. Or ability to store energy. You want to be able to put some cover and some condition. And I know Dave talked about his thin cows coming down out of the mountains, but they're already bred. Okay? They're already bred. Stress tolerance high, cavities high, and actually that cavities column, if you look at it, nobody wants to tolerate low cavities. And I'm not really sure we want to tolerate moderate levels of cavities. I want mine high. And then this is actually number five, and this is breed type characteristics and uses. And again, crediting Dr. Cundiff to starting this kind of thought, what Steve did is that he sent out, this is probably 20 years ago, he sent out a list of breeds and said, okay, how would you rate these breeds for these different characteristics? And he put them across the top. Steve's got seven or eight across the top. Body size, milk production potential, age at puberty, hot climate adapted, flexion ability, muscle expression, tenability, and marbling. And then he had, I don't know, probably 40 or 50 breeds listed down there. And then when he combined it, he essentially said, okay, I'm looking for some breed groups. And if I don't hit the wrong button, British, Angus, Hereford, Shorthorn, Continental Beef, that would be like Charolais, the Italian breeds, the Limousine, Continental Dual Purpose would be like Simmental and Gelby. And then dairy, primarily Holstein and Jersey. Boss Indicus would be basically straight gray and red Brahmins. Okay, maybe Nolors now. American breeds, but those breeds that have Boss Indicus and one of those other breeds, okay? So it'd be like Beefmaster, Sammy Gertrudis, and Cimarron, Brainford, Brangus, and Red Brangus. They would be in there. And then specialty breeds between Kinley, joke about being things like Longhorn and Belgian Blue. You know, and realize they don't fit there, but that's kind of the specialty breeds. And then he said, all right, how do the so-called folks rate these? And so, because I'm an American breeds kind of guy, okay, we're going to go across here. And you can see that for body size, we're looking for kind of moderate to, I mean, they are moderate to high. And so if we're looking for a body size that fits in a stressful environment with low energy, I got to stay away from the high end in that group. I got to stay closer to the more moderate size. And then milk production, moderate to high. Well, once again, I've got to stay away from that high end. And then so you go on down there and you match those across. You see kind of within that breed, those individuals that are important. And this allows me to get back, get these folks back to thinking about, okay, yeah, breed's important, but now we need to think about selecting individuals within those breeds. Because as we change our environment, and I'm not sure who said it, maybe Dave said it again this morning, about, you know, purebred breeders have made a real cush environment for their cattle compared to commercial producers. I want you to think about, if you can, 100 years ago, what the environment was like for cattle production in the South. When we still had fever ticks running around, brucellosis, and all kinds of other nasty things. And even the commercial cattle environment has changed quite a bit and been a little bit more cush. Those of y'all that don't know what cush means, that means kind of like dessert. Okay? And so it's made it a little bit more easy for us to raise cattle. What about these cattle? What are they? What do you think this one over here is on the side? If you said that that was my boss's cow, you'd be absolutely correct. Okay, the way she is, she's probably a Red Angus Gelding cross. And that cow over there, she's pretty distinctive as being what? Brahman Hereford cross, right? And she's got a Charlotte, I mean, excuse me, slip of the tongue, an Angus calf inside. Okay, and that Angus sire, he came from Kansas. He didn't have to live very long. He just had to breed those cows. He lived fine, okay? He lived fine. And so this is what our problem is right here. And I don't care whether you're up here or down in my part of the country or you're in Florida or California. The problem is that when these animals come into the feed yard or go to the sale barn, they say, yeah, I can tell it's a crossbred, but with what? Okay? Most of the time, we can't guess what they are. And then finally, what Steve did is he's got this really neat little chart. He says, all right, if you've got X type breed type of cows, what kind of sires can you use? And this really goes back to the basis of complementarity. Now, we've talked about hybrid vigor, and we defended hybrid vigor a lot today. All right, and then I'm kind of talking about the breed effects. All right, and we've tossed that term around complementarity. And that complementarity, that term, and it's actually spelled with an E. It's not a compliment, like Bob's a handsome guy, okay? It's like if we take 2 plus 2, it doesn't equal 4. It equals 4.1 or 4.2 or 4.3. Because we combine 2 and 2 exactly in the right way, that we don't get, okay, the number we expect. We get slightly better number. And so complementarity could be, and it's a system deal. Y'all heard that? You've heard that term today, a system. You have to think about the whole system. Gordon Dickerson and Tom Cartwright were the original gurus thinking about systems analysis, looking at, okay, what are all the inputs and all the outputs and all the costs? And if we change this, how does it affect everything down the line? And there's others that have come along behind it that have worked in that. But, you know, it's really hard. Our industry is, you know, we all kind of want to go in the same way, but we all want to do it in our own way. And so it's hard to do that. But so this is kind of a systems approach. And it's trying to look at ways to look at using breeds, breed effects, using heterosis, and maybe using complementarity. So across the top, these are sire breed types, and they'll fit those same general breed types that we talked about in the previous chart. So British, Bos Indicus, American, Continental, and then a specialized type that you're going to breed for heifers. Okay? And then over here on the right hand, on the left hand side, is the cow breeder cross, and it tends to get a little bit more. So we have British, Bos Indicus, British crosses, so that would be like a Brave Fritter or a Black Baldy. American breed crosses, and those crosses could be with continental European type breeds, or they could be with British breeds. But typically, we want to make sure we don't get them too big. And then continental British, okay, like Sim Angus, for example, continental Bos Indicus, for example, our Southern Balancer, and then of course heifers. And if you go down this list, anywhere you see a mark M, that stands and produces a market calf. Okay? You can market the males or the females as an acceptable calf. If you see an R, that means the heifers could be very desirable in terms of replacements. Okay, and so if you look at British by British, y'all know that the black baldy, we can sell all the black baldies we want. Or we can keep females back as replacements. Okay? And that includes crossbreeds, okay? So however crosses you want, this could be an Angus Hereford cow, and this could be a Shorthorn bull. It doesn't make any difference. You can make a fit there. Now for Bos Indicus, you see this R has got parentheses around it. They make terrific replacement females. But what do we do with the F1 steer? Okay? You feed him. Okay, there is a tremendous increase in feeding margin from feeding those discounted Bos Indicus. I'm talking about Brahman steers, half-blood Brahman steers, even the full-blood Brahman steers. Okay, because if we run them through the sale barn, even in the southern part of the state, they've got to be fed somewhere. People appreciate their value, but you want to get hit with them. And so if you look at that, that's why we've got these parentheses around. The females sell great. In fact, the old line is that, we can produce the males, but the females basically take care of the cost of production. The males are kind of like icing on the cake. And then you can kind of go down here, and then there'll be some considerations. For example, we slip in here Americans. Okay. This could be a Santa Intrudis, and this could be a Beefmaster. It doesn't make any difference. Oh, excuse me. And so you can have, crossbred or pure, but that's why they were designed that way. The Lassiters and the King Ranch and those guys, they put those cattle together so that they'd make their own replacements. And so you can kind of go through that and look at it. Okay, which, sure enough, we've got breeding strategies here. We talked about these breeding systems earlier today. I just threw some thoughts down. Some advantages and disadvantages, and you may or may not disagree with them. I thought this Bob did a really good job, or maybe it was talking about when you cross these breeds, what happens to genetic variation, okay? And particularly in F1, they might all look different, but down in their chromosomes, they're the same. One gene from breed A, one gene from breed B. So, this is the final chart, and again, this is out of tags, and this is out of that last particular tag, and here's what you can get in terms of heterosis from the calf, and that doesn't have a percentage, it just says low and medium of these different types of crosses, whether or not you can get complementarity, how difficult it is. I'm not going to sit here and go down each one of those, but if you're interested, there's strategies here that are already in place for you to go through. So we said, breed effect's important, heterosis is important, complementarity is important. The way you put these together. Okay, if you're a straight bred breeder, for example, let's just say that pick a breed that you've got and you decide you want to get into crossbreed. Would it make more sense for you to change bulls or to change cows? Change bulls because there's fewer of them. Less cost to your entire system. That's a form of complementarity. As long as your calves fit whatever the market is that you're after. Okay? That's a form of complementarity. That means that 2 plus 2 now becomes 4.1 or 4.3. So whether you're a straight bred operator like this fellow is right here, not purebred, those are straight bred Angus. Okay? Out in the central part of the central to mid northern part of the state. Okay, out of the western part, New Mexico, the Trans-Pecos, Hereford, those cattle have a place. It's simple. It's a simple system. Okay, it doesn't require a lot of inputs. Those cattle fit their environment. Okay, and they fit the marketing program. Now you can put an Angus bull on those Hereford cows, create black baldies. That gives you a little bit different marketing opportunity. You can still sell them all as feeders. Or you can sell those black baldies to your neighbors, or you can keep those black baldies and keep Bob's maternal heterosis in your herd. But then you start changing things a little bit. You have to decide, all right, now am I going to go with black baldies and keep some straight Herefords out there? When I put those Angus bulls out and make the black baldies, are they going to breed those F1s? And so those are the kinds of questions you have to ask. Here's an old picture. This is actually taken over near East Texas, believe it or not. It's back in the 50s. So even back then, we've been talking about Crosby for a long time. Just some straight Hereford females and some Braford down in the middle there. This is over. I asked some of my colleagues in other states to send me some pictures just because I knew you wouldn't want to all see Texas pictures. But here's some Brahman cows and old Hereford bulls on them. I don't know if you can say old Hereford anymore, can you? Just say Hereford. Yeah. Whatever. Okay, and this is a form of complementary. I've got Brahman cows. I want to make F1s. I'll just put some Hereford bulls out there. Okay? Here's a back cross. This is a three-quarter blood calf. This is a Hereford Braford calf that we put another Hereford bull out. Yeah, we lose a little bit of direct heterosis in the calf for growth. We still got 100% maternal heterosis in that calf. Make a really great, really good market animal. All right, this is kind of the other way. This is where we've got that F1 calf. We put a Brahman bull out there. Now we've got a three-quarter blood calf. Well, guess what? We still have 100% heterosis in that calf. We still have 50% direct heterosis in that calf. But we've got kind of a different beast now. Three-quarter blood Brahman. Okay? And unless you're in the Braford business, there may not be much demand for that guy. Or if that was a Brangus-type calf. All right. Now, there's some places in Louisiana along the Texas Gulf Coast that a three-quarter blood Brahman female will survive, and nobody else will. But we got to find a bull that fits that cow to make a marketable calf of. Okay, this is the queen of the cow country right here. Brahman Hereford F1 female. Interesting story about this. This is down in Goliad, below San Antonio. This lady would buy these cows produced by somebody else, pay a premium for them. They were bred to an easy calf and bulls. They had their first calf. And then this is, she would come up here to Kansas and buy bulls up to Kansas, next state up. Okay? And buy good ones. $6,000-$7,000 bulls. Okay? And then produce those calves and send them to northern feed yards and feed them out and see 80% plus choice. 10% premium, 10% prime. No yield grade fours. And back 10 years ago, $75 premium. So guess what? You can do it with a little bit of ear. And she would see 90-95% weaned calf crop. Okay? Weaned calf crop in a 90-day breeding season. So in her environment, she just happened to be another one of those calves. This is, as you said, half angus. Okay? Over in Mississippi, we've got Brangus cows that used to have a Charolais bull on them, and now they have a Hereford bull. They're not real pretty. They're in our work clothes. But that's a cross that's going to work. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy that if it has to grade select, okay, and be a yield grade 3 or better, I don't even want to tolerate yield grade 4s anymore. We spend $2 billion a year putting fat on cattle and $1 billion a year taking it off. Okay? That's $3 billion a year. That's as much money as the so-called certified programs brought us in the last 10. We spend $3 billion a year doing that. Okay? We got to stop that. We have to stop that. Here's over in the Gulf Coast, and really I had a picture, I just had those Brahman cows over there, but that's a Red Angus bull. That's a very popular cross. Okay? Because the cattle tend to do a little bit better if they're lighter color. And this is what that calf looks like. Do you see a hump on him? Do you see ears on her? Excuse me. See a little nail flap? Okay? I don't know, Dr. Cundiff is looking at this. That sure looks like an allure. Okay? And that's really what it is. Okay? But nonetheless, it'll kind of give you an idea of what that calf blood's going to look like. But what about just straight Charolais? I know a lot of folks run just straight Charolais, but they'll run real big. Okay? But what's your perk and what can you do with this, okay? Well, you can put Angus cows, Charolais bulls, or put Charolais cows with Angus bulls. Vice versa. Make some market. And so now that's a continental British cross path. That fits. This happens to be our research station over in Overton. Tiger Stripe Peppers, we got a Simmental bulls on. Okay? The problem is, when you start keeping cattle, those replacement heifers back, what happens to them? Get a little big and a little too milky. But in Overton, near in East, deep East Texas, Northeast Texas, they often have enough groceries to provide. This is some brainless heifers that were at my place back when it rained. Okay. So American breeds, they fit, they produce their own replacements. Okay, readily available. They're not for everybody. They're not for everybody. This is a brainless female, and she's got a three-quarter blood Angus calf inside. Still got milk in his mouth. And I'll show you a picture of some of these calves in the feed yard in a minute, but just real quickly. Here's a brainless female. She's got a red, I guess it was a red Angus. She still has a white face from her mom. Okay. Now, I didn't have any pictures of red brainless cows, red brainless females, but so all these American breeds, they'll fit to make some changes to give you a little bit, if you need it, if you want it, hyper vigor and a little bit of Boss Indica's influence. Some beef master females. All right. And now, this is actually a Charolais beef master cross. And I stuck her in her because, you know, I kind of like her. She's one of those cows. Everybody's showing you a cow that's been around a long time, maybe had a little bit of an attitude, or maybe it didn't exactly look like she should. This cow is 14 years old. She's had 13 calves. She's a little big for a lot of us. She'll probably weigh 1,350 pounds. But, you know, I can't really argue with a cow that brings a calf in every year. And, you know, that's when she looks a little bit better right there than she normally does, but then so does that pasture, by the way. It's mostly dirt now. But, you know, it kind of depends on looking at your cattle what you think will fit. Now, this happens to be a Santa Gertrude's parent. No, she's not the prettiest cow. Okay? But she's got a big old heifer calf inside. All right. And then here's just some fun crosses in there. This is a Maine Anjou Continental by Santa Gertrude. That's kind of what they look like. Can't argue with that. She has a calf every year. And so that's the other part of this deal is we're talking about crossbred cattle. And sometimes, you know, yeah, I can't tell if it's a crossbred. I can tell if it's a crossbred, but with what? What's its production like? Don't just start shooting all the dogs because one of them has fleas. Okay? Go back and look at what the records are. Because some of these crossbred cattle, they may not look like one. Okay? But they'll push the scales down every year for you. And so that's the important thing. This is a beef master. She had a little Angus calf inside. Okay? And I kept that heifer, by the way, and she's just like her mom. Her productive young female. This is down close to the border. So told you I wouldn't go across the Rio Grande, but I got pretty close. Down in Starr County. These are some Santa Gertrudis Hereford females. This is a very popular cross down there. Down in South Texas. Take Santa Gertrudis females and put Hereford bulls on them and produce these. Feeders like them. Okay, they have just a touch of ear in them. Okay, cattlemen like them because they kind of have that dark red body and that bottle face or brothel face, depending on where you're from. And you can put any kind of bull you want on there. Raise a great calf. Make an adaptable cow. Okay, and then this is Santa Cruz, not a really good picture. When they first started developing, they've got a King Ranch. And this goes for any composite. You know, I didn't talk about all the, like the Southern Balancer and the Hotlander and some of the other cattle that are out there. I don't have pictures of them necessarily. But, you know, they were designed to fit a new, evolving market. And that's Santa Cruz is kind of that way. You know, when they put that together, a number of y'all were probably in on that discussion. You know, you're looking at the use of Simmental and Red Angus and Gelding on Santa Gertrudis. Which one of those breeds fit? Well, the Simmental tended to fall out. And so then the next best two in terms of fertility and in terms of feeding were the Gelding and the Red Angus. Okay, and then they created two F1s, and then they bred Interstate mated those two F1s, so they came up with roughly a half Santa Gertrudis, a quarter Gelding, a quarter Red Angus. All right, and they tried that, and then when it started getting dry, it started producing a little bit too much milk, so, you know, management kind of pushed more towards the Red Angus side. And so even when you create a breed, or you develop a breed, or you have your own breed, you change it just a little bit to suit your needs, to fit your own requirements. Okay, Simbron, same way. These are talk a little bit about in terms of environment. I showed you my snow slide when we had a snow day. These were some Fleckie cows that were actually purchased up out of South Dakota, and they were brought down to, near San Antonio. Four pot loads came in. 3 years later, there was maybe a handful left. Wasn't their fault. South Dakota's great in April and May. Okay? Central and South Texas ain't. Okay? It's really not. Those were great genetics, probably the best genetics was ever had on that ranch. But, you have to think about when you start changing breeds or a crossbreeding program, where those cattle come from and whether or not they're going to be able to tolerate the environment. Here's a Brahman with a Simmental calf inside, a Fleckie calf, actually. Pretty nice cow. This guy was going to go into the Simbrol business. It's okay to show these slides because he's no longer around. He's not in the Simbrol business. And then he decided to buy some Angus heifer. So you see how what's happening here, right? He's kind of starting to, like this bull, I'm gonna change around. Not bad. You can almost be a sim. We could almost pass her for a sim Angus heifer. Now, what do these calves look like in a feed yard? I think Angus cattle look great when they're fat in a feed yard, and I think Hereford cattle, Charlotte cattle, Simmental cattle, and Brahman cattle, and the American breeds too. But I think a lot of times you don't see those. You don't see the breeds that I see and what they look like. So yeah, they've got these are. Brangus type steers, three quarter blood Hereford, three quarter blood Angus, or quarter blood ear. Yeah, they got a little bit of ear in them. Okay. There's a black one, there's a red one. Okay. So we have both colors. Alright. If it weren't for the ear, we might be able to get in with certified Angus beef if you don't have any sheep to speak of. Okay, this is kind of part of that. You may not be able to see it very well on our deal here, but it's kind of right in the middle of select or towards the upper end. It's got nice ribeye. Okay, and it doesn't. And it's certainly not going to grade a dual grade form. Okay? And so, all these cattle have a place. But you have to figure out what it is. Most, 90% of our commercial cattlemen in the southern plains, I'll venture to say, still think about Iowa. Getting as many calves as they can, get them heavy as they can. And then if they have enough and they get the right offer, then they'll think about feeding them or doing something else with them. But their main objective is to get calves on the ground and get heavy ones on the ground. Right? Now, functional cows don't have to be pretty. Dad, he beat me to it. He showed one of his old sorry cows. Well, this is not one of my sorry cows, but this would look to be a sorry cow. This is a swamp angel, from down there in the. And you can see she's surrounded by some pretty cows and some pretty calves. But, at the time that I took her picture, she was 17 years old and had 16 calves. Okay, but a whole bunch of her sisters are not there anymore. Okay? But, so don't discount just because they don't look very pretty. Okay? And believe me, most of our cows in the southern part of the Great Plains are really good cattle. We can always pick some bad examples out. That don't fit phenotypically or don't fit in terms of what the consumer wants. So with that, I'm going to stop and see if we have any questions, or if y'all need to, we'll just run out to the buses. Thank y'all.